Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. To Write Through the Roof. Today I'm speaking with Amanda Bridgman. Hi Amanda, how's it going?
Hi Madeline, I'm great, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem whatsoever. A little background about Amanda. Amanda is a science fiction writer from Perth, WA. After studying film, television and creative writing, she's been writing a military sci-fi series, the Aurora series, and her latest book, which is a sci-fi alien thriller, The Time of the Stripes, is out now. Thanks again for coming and speaking with me.
It's great. It's actually, this is my first podcast interview, so.
Ah, thank you. You've popped your chair up. Cool. So how I like to start off is to do a few kind of warm-up questions. So think of it as some kind of stretches, some, I don't know, aerobics Oz style. So my first question is, do you write every day?
Do I write every day? I don't necessarily write every single day. I work on the book business every single day. But I actually work full-time in a day job, so I've only got nights and weekends to work on the book business anyway. So, and that's, depending on what I've got going on at the time, I may be writing if I'm working on a novel at the time or if I'm editing. I seem to spend more time on editing than actually writing. But there's also a lot of admin and marketing and, you know, website updates. I send a newsletter out every month. So every single day I am working on the book business but not necessarily writing novels.
Hmm. Okay. And I don't think you're alone there.
No. It's funny when you get emails from people saying, hurry up with the next book. And you have to kind of explain, well, you know, I'm trying to get there, but I work full time and I'm basically working two jobs and I do need to sleep sometimes.
And books take a while.
Yes, I think people think they just magically appear. It's like, no, actually, it's going to take a long time.
So to get yourself into the mood for writing, do you have any writing rituals?
Well, if it's during the week, I will literally come home from work, walk through the door and walk straight into my study and fire up the laptop and go, because I kind of know I've only got so many hours before the brain's dead. So it's basically just walk straight into the study, don't let anything distract me until I need food. On the weekends, I like to get up and work in the mornings because it's to be honest, it's when my neighbours are the quietest. I can get work done. I like peace and quiet, like dead stone cold silence when I write. I like to have that little bubble and no distractions. So I've heard a lot of writers say that they write with music, and I've tried, but I just end up singing along to the music. I can't do it with music, so I need absolute stone cold silence. So just coffee and working in my study, which is my little bubble. It's where I can just lose myself in the writing, in the books, and not come out until I need, you know, food and water.
So coffee is your writing fuel of choice?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I love me coffee. And in terms of fuel, look, if there's chocolate in the house, that certainly goes down well. In winter, I quite like the crumpet with the butter and honey on top.
Ah, crumpet, old school.
Yeah, I know. And not very good for the butt and thighs, but you know, whatever keeps you writing.
Excellent. Fueled by crumpets.
Fueled by crumpets.
Excellent. Okay, so we've got to know you a little bit more. You like your honey and your crumpets. So let's get more in depth. So you're a sci-fi writer, so how do you describe your writing and what themes do you like to explore?
Well, so my two favourite genres are science fiction and thrillers. And so readers can expect, obviously, sci-fi settings with the kind of a thriller aspect in there too. Of the books that I've released, they're quite different. The Aurora series is a space opera military sci-fi, and it's an ongoing saga. The books are about 500, 600 pages long each, and they're character-driven. So it's set around a military outfit. So you've got, you know, the mission that they're on, and you've got your adrenaline-filled spikes in the plot. But I also do spend a bit of time getting to know the characters and the relationships with each other and their loved ones and stuff like that. So it's not just the soldier on the job. It's of the two heroes in that series, Captain Saul Harris, the captain of the ship. He's separated from his wife. He's got a teenage son. So in the first book, it's primarily focused on the mission, but throughout the rest of the series, you get to know his family life as well and how he's constantly juggling the, you know, trying to save mankind versus also trying to be a father and a husband. And the heroine in the series, Carrie, she's a very career-driven woman. And throughout the series, she falls in love as well. So, and it's for her, the story kind of explores her trying to stand up and be equal with the men and being treated equally with the men, whilst also falling in love with one of them. So the romance throughout the series is a strong subplot. So it's not the main plot, but there is a strong romantic subplot throughout the series. And it's not between my two heroes. So Captain Saul Harris and Carrie Wells, they become good friends and allies and colleagues, but there's no romance between the two heroes. So throughout that, I explore themes of friendship and love and loyalty and, you know, what it means to be a soldier and the sacrifices they make to keep the rest of us safe and the hard job they have of doing that and having to keep secrets and all that sort of stuff, as well as, you know, trying to be a normal human with normal human relationships. So that's the Aurora series. And then The Time of the Stripes is very different again. It's a standalone book at the moment, although I am planning to write a sequel at some point when I can fit it in my schedule. So that's a shorter, sharper book. And that it kind of explores prejudice and when, you know, bad things happen in life and people get angry and disenfranchised. And so it explores mob rule and the people who succumb to mob rule and go with the flow of the survival and people who fight to rise above it and stand against it and say, no, this is wrong, what we're doing. So I like the dark and gritty elements in my stories, and I like drama, good old-fashioned drama. But they will have science fiction settings and there'll be plenty of action and, you know, touches of horror as well.
Mm. So do you have a military background at all?
No, I don't. No, nothing that goes past reading military sci-fi and watching lots of films and TV and growing up on things like Tour of Duty, watching Tour of Duty and stuff like that. So, no, and for that specific reason with the Aurora series, I established my own military outfit, and I borrowed aspects from the different real life military groups because I didn't want to specifically have one follow one and then be told I've done everything wrong, so I made up my own. Everything may not be exactly how you expect, but this is how they do it in mine.
Well, that sounds like a lot of research into military outfits and strategies, etc.
Yeah, you know, Google has been my friend, and there's certainly a lot of websites and you know, Facebook groups these days that you can ask the questions that you need to. So, and I've had a few people, actually an Australian military guy, he emailed me and said he was enjoying the books. He did question some of the military stuff I had. He said he thought Saul Harris was too young, the role of captain was too young, like he's older, he should have been much more advanced, but I kind of had made it, you know, he's captain of the ship, so it was different take on things. So, but it was good. I had a good chat with him about that, and he was cool with that. So,
excellent. Yeah. Good. Readers can be very helpful.
They can be helpful. They can be helpful. And it's good, you know, when they reach out to you, and it's like, cool. Okay, and you can develop relationships with them through that. And if you ever have questions, you can always ask. But because of, you know, it's science fiction with a touch of fantasy in there as well. So I kind of, I've got room to play with. It doesn't have to be exactly 100% correct any particular thing, because I've made up my own outfit. And, you know, don't let facts get in the way of a good story sometimes.
Well, that's good to know, because I've been talking to a few crime writers who've been telling me about, oh, there's either specific books out there that outline police procedure, or you can go to the Metropolitan Police in the UK and talk to them. And, yeah, so I just, it's good to know that there's Facebook groups out there that you could do the same thing for if you had questions about military stuff. So that's good to know.
Yeah, well, the current book I'm working on at the moment is a sci-fi crime thriller, and there's a really helpful Facebook group called Writers Police Detectives. But there's legal ones, there's cop ones, so you can ask questions. So if you're writing a straight crime thriller, then there's more onus on you there, that you have to get the detail correct, because you're writing a contemporary crime thriller, or, you know. But if you're infusing it with science fiction or fantasy, you've got a bit of leeway there.
Cool. All right. Let's get back to talking about writing. And so the key question that I like to ask is, what's the one thing that's been most helpful in improving your writing?
The one thing that has been, when I first started out, I was basically just writing in my cave. I didn't know any other writers. I wasn't on social media. And what I've discovered is that you can learn so much from other writers. So joining writers' groups and finding people in your tribe, as they call it. So if you're a science fiction writer, you seek out other science fiction writers, and you beta read for each other, and you just help each other out with opportunities and things like that. So I've learnt that, you know, working with other people and, you know, opening yourself up to that is well worth the effort. So you don't need to do it on your own. You can learn so much by going to conventions and stuff like that. And I've also learned that while it's good to listen to writing advice, you need to take all writing advice you receive with a pinch of salt. Because what works for one person won't necessarily work for another, and what one person hates, the next person loves. So, you know, when I first started, I was reading all this advice, you know, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. And I thought, well, I do every single one of those things. And yet the books were still selling. I was getting emails from readers, and I think, well, some people out there don't seem to care. So they love what I'm doing. So the biggest lesson I've learned, I think, is that just you got to believe in yourself and your voice. And if you're getting good feedback and emails from readers, then you're doing something right. So if someone else tells you what you're doing is wrong, then obviously they're wrong, because it's working for you.
That's really good advice. I know that I do that similarly, where I take on too much writing advice and then I get kind of lost.
Yes, definitely. For a while there, because my Aurora books were long, like 500, 600 pages, I'd always be listening to writers saying, oh, you know, they're too long, people won't read books that long, it's got to be short and sharp. And, you know, and then I'd read their books and I'd be going, oh, okay, you got a short, sharp book, but there's no heart, there's no soul, I don't know your characters. You've got a good plot, and it's written well, but I don't know your characters. And the one thing I get about my books is that everyone says they feel like they really know the characters, and, you know, they really like the characters. And so I was, for a while there, I was trying to write shorter, sharper books, thinking that's what I had to do, but I didn't have to do it, because the readers liked what I was already doing. So, yeah, take everything with a pinch of salt.
So in terms of techniques in your writing, are you trying anything new at the moment?
Am I trying anything new at the moment? I try, just in generally, with each book to improve upon the last one. So I did part of the, because I've been writing the Aurora series for so long, I did want to try something different. And that was part of the reason behind the Time and the Stripes. I wanted to prove that I could write something else outside of the Aurora series, but I did want to try the shorter, sharper book. And so that's been interesting, and my new science fiction crime thriller is shorter again as well. So that's me sort of moving a little bit more into the thriller aspect of things. So it's just, you just got to keep, I can't put my finger on anything definite, other than in general terms, just trying to improve my writing to make sure it's more concise, to work on the world building and the descriptions. And, you know, it's just something that comes with time, I think, when you read more books, even screenplays and watching TV and films, and so, you know, when you find something that you like, to stop and look at it and go, what was it about that I liked? And I think the key to any good book is an element of mystery and intrigue, because that's what gets people turning the pages. So it's about trying to identify what works for you and then infusing that into your own books.
Mm. Okay, great. So you're talking about reading there. So what writers inspire you?
Different writers inspire me for different things. There's some that inspire me because I love their work. I love the books that I read. Other writers inspire me because they're really business savvy and they know how to market their books. Or they inspire me because they're so good at public speaking and engaging with readers. So different writers impress me for different things. Books that I read recently that I've really enjoyed. I really enjoyed Ernest Cline's Ready Player One. And Andy Weir's The Martian. I thought they were really enjoyable. And The Martian, I actually did an audiobook, and part of that was the audiobook narrator, who was just fantastic. What else? I quite enjoyed Emily St. John Mandel's Station 11. Mm-hmm. Stephen Moss's Fear the Sky. So that's a alien invasion one. And something I read recently, I read the first four books in Lindsay Baroka's Fallen Empire series, which is probably the closest thing I've found to the Aurora series, even though it's still quite different. She has a little bit more snarky kind of humour in hers, and a fantasy element's dialed up a little bit more in hers than mine. But I found it kind of similar and really, really enjoyed reading that, because it's a space opera and there's a strong romantic subplot to it as well, but there's plenty of action and, you know, a tough heroine. So it just, you know, depends what mood you're in on the day and what you read and what format you read it in. But yeah, there's plenty of authors out there doing fantastic things that are inspiration.
Fantastic. All right, so tell us a little bit more about Time and Stripes. So what inspired it?
It's funny, it initially just came to me one really quickly, actually. I was at work and I was about to take a run down the shops to get some chocolate, and I asked people, my colleagues, you know, do you want anything? And there was a new girl there, and she said, oh, she wanted some chocolate, but I had to check all the chocolate bars for traces of nuts because she was allergic to nuts. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, okay. And so I walked down the shops, and just while I was walking down the shops, I was thinking about, you know, how difficult it must be for her that she's got to check everything before she can put it in her mouth. Whereas, you know, I could just chuck anything in my mouth, unfortunately. But, you know, she's got to watch what she eats. And so I was just in the brief walk down to the shops, I just suddenly had this image of this girl in my head who was facing a really horrible situation, but she also had, like, a medical condition to deal with at the same time. So it kind of started there. And the story formed of this small town in America, and an alien spaceship comes down, hovers over the town for 24 hours. The people inside don't actually know what's happened. They're fine 1 minute, and then the next minute they wake up on the floor, but they've actually been out for 24 hours. Meantime, the outside world's been watching them for 24 hours, trying to figure out what this spaceship's doing. The military can't do anything about it. Then the spaceship disappears and the people wake up, and then they discover that a whole bunch of people are missing from the town. And that of those that are left, some have been left marked with these stripes on their faces, from their mouths down to over their hearts. and the others are clean. And so there's obviously a big reaction to that, and people worried about a contagion. So the town remains isolated from the rest of the world, and military troops are sent in to divide the town into two, into the what becomes known as the clean skins and the striped ones. And the story then is an exploration of, you know, of prejudice and how people, you know, fear can make people do stupid things. You know, if they think their life's on the line and they want to survive. And that was kind of inspired by, you know, the Ferguson riots, the LA riots, all those sort of things that you see on the news where horrible things have happened and people are angry and they're frustrated and they don't know what else to do. But, you know, things boil out of control and sometimes end up worse. And, you know, innocent people get caught in the crossfire and things like that. So that's kind of what inspired it. And it was a bit of an exploration of yeah, how things just can burn out of control really quickly.
It sounds very topical.
Yes, it was. Kind of, I mean, it's easy for me to sit on my, you know, my couch and watch the TV and just go, oh, you know, that's horrible, because I'm not living in it, but, you know, everything's heightened 1,000 times for those people living in it.
Absolutely. Yeah, your description sounds very cinematic as well. I can almost picture it in my head of how it would look on the screen.
Yeah, just the slow descent into chaos and the people trying to get people to see sense and not do the wrong thing. And yeah, so I'm proud of it.
Excellent. Okay, cool. So I might start to wrap up now. I'll let you get back to your weekend so you can get your writing in. So you were talking before about how you're writing a sci-fi crime mystery at the moment. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I can and I can't.
Well, what you'd like to tell us.
Yes. The reason I say there's only so much I can say about it, it's let's just say my agent's in negotiations about this one at the moment. Mm-hmm. So there's restrictive thought I can say, but it's set in the near future, USA, and it's set in a time where there's been a bit of a backlash to technology, in particular to neural implants. Yes, they've had a big crash, and due to this crash, there's been communities that have become known as tech pullaways, and they've moved out from the cities, and they're kind of living tech-free. And some of these communities are religious, some of these are just survivalist communities. And there's one particular community where a young woman ends up dead, and two cops from the city go to this community on the outskirts of the city to investigate. And it's not quite as straightforward as it seems, because you've got this tech-free community, they're very religious. And just on the outside of this community is a new high-tech treatment facility for brutal killers who have been transformed into placid town servants called Serenes. Mm. So a lot of people are obviously pointing the finger, thinking it must be one of these guys that have broken their serenity. And I better shut up there, I think, before I get too far away.
Well, you've given us a good enough teaser there. The last two books you were talking about, you've set them in the US.
Yes. Is there a reason for that? Hmm. Well, I try to, at the end of the day, I want people to read my books. I want them to be universally appealing. And you can set stories in Australia, but sometimes they are a harder sell to the international world. If you set them, you know, if you write fantasy, you can get away with it because you can make up your own towns and you don't ever have to specify. But with science fiction, you kind of do have to root it in reality somewhere. So whether you base it in the UK or the US, at the end of the day, the US is the largest population of readers. So that's to do with it, but it's also, let's face it, the US is very much in the news every single day. Mm. So it's a good place to set things because it's very topical at the moment as well. So you can tie a lot of your plots into things, and that's part of the reason why I set the time and stripes there.
Mm-hmm.
The Aurora series is still very international though, because it has an international cast of characters. So obviously the heroine's Australian, the hero is American, but we've got Kiwis in there and all sorts of other nationalities in there. So it just depends on the story itself as to what and where. And I think it just, you end up just picking a locale that works best for the story.
Mm. Aussies and Kiwis in space sounds pretty fun.
I had to have all my Antipodeans in there.
Cool. Okay, well, thank you so much. So I think I'll wrap up now. So if people want to find your books and find out more about you, where can they find you online?
Okay, I'm on Twitter at Bridgman_books. I'm on Facebook as Amanda Bridgman. And if you want to check out my website, it's amandabridgman.com.au. And they're the three main things that I use. So you should be able to find me.
And your website's very nice. I had a look at it just before and I was thinking, oh, this is pretty schmick.
Oh, thank you very much. I can't take credit for that, really. I had author Nathan M. Ferrugia helped me with that, so he kind of has to take the credit for that.
Well, you can pass on that. I thought it looked pretty good. Okay, well, thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
Fantastic. Thanks. Now, today's tip is about the best way to take a break from your writing. I'm in the middle of a first draft at the moment, and every now and then, despite my best plotting beforehand, I find myself facing into a plot problem or stop short of writing myself into a dead end. I'm beginning to see writing a first draft as similar to navigating a maze. My initial reaction when I hit a dead end is to push through and try and force an answer or decision with one-eyed determination. But the other side of my brain knows that this doesn't work. Now, I could get all hippy-dippy and say that the muse doesn't appreciate being rushed, but the truth is the answer often happens when I walk away from my desk. So I've been telling myself to stop straining and leave it alone, and the answer will arrive in due course. And it usually does. Usually as soon as I've walked away from the keyboard to make a cup of tea, hang out some washing, go for a walk, or on my commute, or in those hazy in-between sleep and wake states. I've done a little more research about this and the best ways to take a break. Writing and editing uses the prefrontal cortex, and like anything, it gets fatigued. So the best way to take a break is to use another part of your brain. Now, I'm no psychologist or neurologist, and so I'll link some articles in the show notes. Research suggests that one way to take a break is to get some fresh air out into nature, or even look at a picture of a beautiful landscape if you're stuck in a cubicle with no natural light. Another approach is to let your mind wander, maybe doodle or daydream. In episode 8 of the podcast, I spoke with Dave Hutchinson about smoking breaks. Now, I'm not advocating taking up smoking, but the practice of leaving your desk and letting your mind wander as you smoke can really help the ideas come back. Other ideas include exercise, maybe a walk around the block, a few push-ups, a bit of yoga, a laugh, or some eye exercises. But the research says that the worst thing for a break is to check your phone. The purpose of a break is to restore those decision-making parts of your brain, and checking your phone, as we all know, is addictive, and it's not conducive to concentration. It gives us a little boost when we're bored and rewards compulsive behaviour, not the intense concentration we need for writing our stories. So even when preparing for this tip, I was stuck for an idea, and then walking home from the train station yesterday, the idea hit me. So make sure you take a good break today and put your phone away. Thanks for listening to Write Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Write Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?